Agenda item number 12. Well, for 10:20, look at that, 10:20.
I'm that good.
Periodic status review, Columbia Sharp Tail Grouse, briefing, public hearing, and decision, and I won't forget you, Dennis, this time. So with that, Hannah.
Thank you. One more species to talk about, endangered species to talk about today. Before I get started, a slight change in the agenda. You mentioned it. We had it listed as briefing, public hearing, and decision. Some of our paperwork, the form we filed, indicated that decision would be in August, and so we do need to delay that decision until August. So this would be the briefing and public hearing, and then I'll come back very quickly in August to hear the decision. Okay. And with that, so, and also, this is not the first time you've heard about the sharp-tailed grouse, and so this is a much protracted version, very quick. So status in Washington. It is currently state threatened and was listed in 1998. They currently occupy about 8% of their historical range, and we are continuing to see decline in the population. They're reliant on grassland and shrub steppe habitat for breeding and riparian habitat in the winter. They're threatened with habitat loss, degradation, fragmentation, small population size, predation. And we do have multiple conservation actions underway, including just this year. We had an augmentation into the Tunk Valley. We wrote a recovery plan in 2012 that indicated that a threshold for uplisting from threatened to endangered if the population dropped below 450 individuals. And our 2017 estimate was at 608 individuals. And then our original PSR recommendation was to maintain threatened status. That's when you saw me multiple times and Derek was here. Derek Stinson was here. However, there are some additional considerations that may not have been highlighted in 2012 when the recovery plan was written. So all of the local populations are now less than 200 birds. So they're very, very small and may require augmentation to keep them on the landscape. Wildfires have had a short-term and yet unknown impact. We suspect that in the long term, the fires will not be such a bad thing for sharp-tailed grouse, but certainly has short-term impact. And the habitat connectivity between these populations continues to diminish. And these names down here are the individual populations of sharp-tailed grouse, and you can see those numbers are pretty small. In our initial 90-day comment period, we received four comments, three that were supportive of keeping the sharp-tailed grouse as listed, and one suggested delisting. We received two letters that suggested encouraged uplisting to endangered, both one from the Washington Diversity Advisor, the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council, sorry about that, and from Seattle Audubon. We heard public testimony in December of 2017 recommending uplisting to endangered from the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council, Tahoma Audubon, and Washington State Audubon. And then we came before you in January, and the guidance was to initiate, because we hadn't filed all the forms for a rule change, was to initiate those procedures to allow status reclassification, should that be the decision that you wanted to make. Two additional public comment periods were opened. The CR 102 filing was 30 days in May, and a SEPA filing also in May. We did not receive any other comments within that period. I wanted to note also, within the last few days, we have received a comment letter, and I believe you all have seen it, from the Cattlemen's Association and from the Farm Bureau. Given those additional considerations, we recognize and agree that the threats to Columbia sharp-tailed grouse are significant. Those very small populations, habitat connectivity being a real issue, and that the current status of the population is consistent with the definition of endangered, which is right there, any wildlife species native to the state that is seriously threatened with extinction throughout all or a significant portion of its range. And due to those considerations, we now recommend that the sharp-tailed grouse be reclassified to endangered. I'll take any questions. And this picture, just for fun, is one of the birds that was just augmented, relocated to the Tunk Valley.
Thank you again, Hannah. Questions from the commission? No? OK. Okay, we do have two public comments. So Dennis and Tom Davis, please.
Chair Smith, Director Storr, Acting Director, Deputy Director Windrup. I'm Dennis DeSilvis with the WDAC, and we totally agree with this uplisting. You've seen our letter, but I'd like to read something to you, and I'll tell you where it's from later, but I want to read this to you. Chickens. No, I haven't seen a prairie chicken for, I don't know when, several years anyhow. Oh, yes, there used to be a good many of them in through here. That is, before them city sports came with their dogs and guns and cleaned them all out. Such an answer might be expected of the average east side rancher anywhere from Walla Walla to the northern line, though it would only be just to add that the farmer himself has helped himself pretty liberally in the early days when chickens were plentiful and when every man accepted the bounty of nature without anxious thought for the morrow. Anxious thought for the morrow. The sharp-tailed grouse still lingers in certain less frequented regions, and some also know of local coveys may be inclined to scoff at what I've written. But take my word for it, there is not one sharp-tail in the state where there were 50 30 years ago. We have no one to blame for it but ourselves either. This is written in 1909. This is Dawson and Bowles, Birds of Washington. In all that time, the sharp-tailed grouse populations have been going down. You all know that. I just wanted to bring a little bit more, almost 100 years now, perspective on sharp-tailed grouse. Thank you.
Do you have that book?
No, I don't.
That looks like a nice
That's
book.
Wonderful, yeah.
This is it. My copy. Volume 2.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Tom Davis, this morning, representing both the Washington Cattlemen and the Washington Farm Bureau, expressing our concern with the potential decision to uplist this species. And you have letters, I hope, from both the Cattlemen and the Farm Bureau that spell out our two organizations' concerns. And just a couple of thoughts I wanted to share with you from that. And one is, from the cattlemen's perspective, they were concerned about the blame that was put on grazing. And in the periodic status review, it states, quote, although habitat conversion was a more important historical factor in Washington, the degraded conditions of remaining habitat due to past heavy grazing and ongoing effects in local areas are important factors hurting recovery. And from that, they wanted to emphasize, you know, clearly, throughout time and interesting, you know, historical perspective, there have been mistakes made in management, both in farm practices and grazing, and we have learned from those and are moving on. And the practices, the best management practices being employed today, have improved the conditions for both the livestock and for the wildlife that depend upon it and the habitat that's important in general. And I was reminded as I was preparing my thoughts here is in our lifetimes, the Department of Fisheries, they attempted to introduce Atlantic salmon into our salt waters here in Washington, thinking at that time, historically, that that was the right thing to do. We now know that was not a good decision, and we certainly wouldn't do that now. And it's true for farmers as well, that we have learned from past practices and are making improvements. And that should be taken into consideration. And the partnerships that the department needs with landowners, if indeed we are going to recover these important species, we need partnerships, we need trust, and we need to be able to work together. And my concern is, out in the rural communities, the concept of the state-listed species and the federal ESA is confused. It's not clear to many, and I have to at times go back and read the state authority as well to better understand the difference. If by putting the label of endangered on this species, it could decrease the interest of a private landowner to work with the department because of the concern of it being endangered. And if indeed we want to improve the trust between the department and the landowners and work for ways of working together to improve the habitat for a whole list of species, that trust is so important working forward. So I just wanted to share that with you as a thought. There may be, you know, a case for uplisting, but I think there are some thoughts and concerns that I hope you take into mind as you make that decision, have that conversation.
Thanks, Tom. Commissioner Thornburg?
Thank you, Tom, for your thoughtful comments and your letters as well. I totally agree with what you've said in terms of the issue of trust. I do think there is the case for uplisting this species by our state law, as was presented in the presentation. We basically have a non-viable population, actually little populations. The only thing that's keeping them going right now is augmenting. And when the commission made gave the guidance, we also asked staff to review the recovery actions that are being taken and, you know, where do we need to make a difference. Before I talk about one of the important areas, that being our partnerships with landowners, I want to add something else that I've noted about grazing, working with this species. You know, we've learned about grazing and what is more compatible with grazing and preservation of the habitat. It is grazing that has preserved the shrub steppe habitat in Washington. I mean, that's where most of it still exists, where there's been grazing. So I acknowledge that partnership with the Cattlemen Association as someone who works on the recovery of these species. In terms of the importance of the trust that you're talking about, one of the things that we discussed when we gave the guidance among ourselves was, what will this do? And our hope in doing this, which we believe is legally necessary, is enhance those partnerships. The NRCS programs are so important to the preservation of all of these species. We're looking at the reauthorization of the Farm Bill and maintaining those programs, right, increasing them for our landowner partners, and that's what we're hoping, you know, that this does. So we appreciate that you're working with your constituents and trying to explain this is different than a federal listing. I recently was talking to Lincoln County landowner. He's our largest grazer in Lincoln County, and he is the only landowner in the county who's gotten, or he and his partners, who have participated in the Sagegrass Initiative. And we were talking about the possibility of birds being on his land, and he was really quite excited about it. Our landowners are such important partners in this work, and so I appreciate that you're, you know, working with your constituents to help them understand.
Well, I appreciate your sharing that. You know, and one of the things of concern is both the cattlemen and the Farm Bureau, in the midst of the other issues that we're working on, we were not aware of the open public comment period. And so I think there's room there for the department to improve its outreach to its partners, so that we, you know, would be aware of that. And we need to do a better job also keeping an eye on what actions of the department and the commission are. But for some reason, that one slipped by us.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you again, Tom. I just have to say I could not agree with you more that a lot of these species, you know, can be easily thought of as, well, grazing is part of the problem, and that you stated it very clearly. You know, in the past, there were some things that were overgrazed and whatnot, but there's so many good management practices going on now that support the coexistence of grazing on this landscape as well as some of these species. And I think with sage grouse especially, there's a lot of research now coming out because there's a lot of dollars in that world trying to recover that species.
Right.
I had a good fortune to spend a day with Tip Hudson from Cooperative Extension out in Ellensburg looking at some grazing plans on the PSE ground, and you know, if anybody doubts that grazing can be done well and compatible and create a very good ecosystem, spend some time with Tip, because he has a wealth of knowledge. It's research-based. And this, we've got to get away from this concept that there's an evil out there called grazing that's not, shouldn't be on the landscape. We're on the landscape. We're part of this system. And if we can make it work, I support you 100%. So I appreciated your comments, and I back them up 100%. I will say, when we discussed this in other meetings, you know, we brought this idea up. Will endangered come to a landowner as a threat, or will it come to them as something that's positive? And so we were asked to all go talk to folks, and I did. And I talked to some county commissioners, and I talked to some ranchers. And I did want to read a letter that I got from the just adjacent to where these birds were released, from a rancher in the Tunk area, for the record. So said, I'm writing, this is Ernie Faglinski, I'm writing to support uplisting sharp-tailed grouse from threatened to endangered. I'm a major landowner in Tunk Valley, Okanagan County. It's important for sharp-tailed grouse. My family has grazed cattle on 14,000-acre ranch for three generations. Our ranch represents 50% of the private land in the Tunk Valley, and have remained uniquely in open space and avoided much development, which is good for sharp-tailed grouse. We have a long history of providing habitat for wildlife on our land, and that includes the sharp-tailed grouse, whose population has plummeted in recent years. Uplisting this grouse species from threatened to endangered seems a reasonable thing to do, given the alarming rate of their decline in populations throughout the state of Washington. So I recognize your concerns, but I think with good education and talking to folks, you know, here's a major landowner that says, okay, and you know, and we've talked about this now with them. The difference on a state listing from threatened to endangered doesn't bring armies down on you. It can bring some additional dollars. You know, it can bring some more resource to help with habitat, and sometimes we call it habitat, and ranchers call it forage. So I think there's some positive things in this, and but I do respect your comments, and it's particularly about grazing, that we don't start to pin the fate of species just because of some practices that were occurred years ago. So
yeah, and I guess it goes back to improving the partnership that our two organizations have with the department and the commission. That it be more robust, so that our two organizations represent, we're the largest ag organizations representing livestock producers, and we were not aware of this discussion. And so, again, there's responsibility on our end, and I think there's responsibility on the department's end as well, that communication needs to improve so that partnership can improve, so we can better reach landowners and let them know what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Tom, for coming today. I did read your letter, and I was concerned about your organization's lack of trust, or bringing up the issue of trust if the commission were to go ahead and approve this uplisting today. I think in some ways it's fortuitous that there was a some sort of scheduling or notice problem, so that we can continue the conversation. And my colleagues, I think tried to reassure you and your organization that we want to continue the trust. We don't want to lose the trust. So, so I remember, and I don't want to point fingers, but I do remember this issue came, and Hannah, in her presentation, talked about that this came. This issue came before the commission in January 2018, and I do not remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there was any concerns about initiating the process. And so was the Farm Bureau, and I know this is probably right when the legislature was starting, and you've got a lot of issues, so was it just kind of an oversight then on your part, or your organization's part, or the cattlemen's?
For both cattlemen and for our organization, we just were not aware of it. And again, that for reasons, you know, and I was a bit distracted with what was happening.
Yes, I understood. There's a lot of, it's a busy time of year. Okay, good. Thank you.
And I don't want to put words into Tom's mouth, but I'm pretty certain I can say this. Not by any shape, matter, nor form are we anti-grouse by any shape, matter, nor form. I think we're both just a little afraid that we're going to try and love these birds to death. And one thing that probably stuck in my craw a little bit, having been on the commission for 3-4 years, in previous reports on the sage grouse, threats to grouse, and here was a picture of a cow every time. And so, yeah, that's probably why we have a little bit of angst. And in my busy schedule, I'll be out doing something, but if a poof of smoke goes up or my pager goes off, no matter what we're doing, we drop it, run and put on the yellow shirts and go fight fire. One thing that you've learned, especially in our part of the world fighting fires, is, and this is one of the issues on department ground, if it hasn't been grazed, lots of times you're just wasting your time because the fuel loads are like that. You put it 90 degrees and wind, 14% humidity, you're wasting your time. We always back off, go see where the ground's been grazed a little bit. There we stand a chance to fight some fire. And back to your pygmy rabbit deal. Fire is a reality in the arid west. We have to mitigate some of that. So, yeah, I have concerns. I really do. I'm with Tom 100% on this. We're not anti-grouse for a second. We want to do everything we possibly can, but we got to have the tools and the trade. And there again, is there angst when it goes from endangered to threatened, or from threatened to endangered? Yeah, there is. So, real or perceived, that's reality. So, I just, and the cattleman, I thought, wrote a really good letter, and you were in part involved in the deal, Tom. So, thanks, and that's our side of the story.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking the time next week to go up and visit with the producers up in the Skagit Valley on the elk issue up there that Amy's had a lot of. She's provided great direction and opportunity. I won't be there, but I want to just thank you for that, and thank you for Amy for her leadership in pushing forward the conversations up there.
That's Monday. I'll be up there.
So thank you.
Sure. Thank you.